welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hello, Mike.
We have a good poem you chose this week. In fact, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to do a couple that have to do with screening. This particular poem deals with ovarian cancer screening, a very serious problem, something we'd love to have some sort of screening test for. Ovarian cancer is a leading cause of death from GYN malignancy in the United States. It's right up there around the world as well. Estimates are that there are about 20,000 new cases of ovarian cancer in the U.S. a year, about 14,000 cancer-related deaths from ovarian cancer. Obviously, this generates lots of interest in being able to detect the disease early at a time when you can reduce mortality. It led to, a generation ago, a number of serum tumor markers that were thought to be associated with ovarian malignancies. Particularly, our listeners will be familiar with CA-125. Also, some imaging tools, particularly ultrasound. Survival from ovarian cancer is thought to be related to the stage at which the diagnosis is made. Five-year survival is over 90% of women with stage 1 disease. It's 25% with those with distant mets. The overall survival in women with ovarian cancer is dismal, and it suggests we need to do something more aggressive. There are risk factors that our listeners may know about that put women at high risk for ovarian cancer. Those women may benefit from more intensive screening. So, where do we go with all of this? The CA-125 is a glycoprotein antigen. Its values are elevated in about half of women with early stage disease. As the disease progresses, about 80% of women will have elevated CA-125 levels. That obviously means some will never have those levels. There are other tumor markers. We talked about ultrasound, pelvic ultrasound, transabdominal ultrasound, transvaginal ultrasound, have all been evaluated as potential first-line screening methods. We have a poem this week. It was published in the journal Lancet 2016, volume 387. It starts on page 945. The clinical question it's trying to answer is, do women who are screened for ovarian cancer have better health outcomes than women who are not screened? Mark, after that long introduction...
That was long, Mike.
Sorry, but you know, we don't ever get a chance to talk about ovarian cancer. So
yeah. Okay. No, that's good. Thank you. So yeah, this was a study from the Lancet, and the investigators did this huge trial. 200,000 women were randomized. About 100,000 got usual care. They were all 50 to 74 years old, and the rest were randomized 50,000 in each group to either getting pelvic ultrasound alone, or a kind of a unique algorithm called the ROCA algorithm, which takes the patient's signs and symptoms and risk factors and age and CA-125 results and predicts their likelihood of having ovarian cancer. If they exceeded a certain threshold based on that algorithm, they got an ultrasound, and if they saw any abnormality there, they were sent to biopsy. Kind of the unique part of it is, instead of just saying that there's one abnormal CA-125 for each woman, that's 35 nanograms per milliliter, for example, each woman kind of became her own abnormal, had her own normal level based on what her pattern was. So somebody who had levels of 10, 8, 12, 9, then all of a sudden 25 would probably be pulled out by the algorithm as requiring an ultrasound immediately, rather than waiting another year to see if it exceeds 35. So it was a promising algorithm, and basically what they found was that this was the 11-year results. They had pretty complete follow-up for most patients at 11 years. They had about a quarter of the patients that were followed for 14 years, so long period. Around 8 years, they started to see a little bit of a separation of the survival curves and some possible benefit. And if they did some statistical reanalyses and said, oh, well, not, we'll use this model and not that model, and we'll exclude the prevalent cancers and, you know, we'll do all these things, then they saw a significant benefit to screening, about a 20% relative risk reduction, but since it's a fairly rare cancer, it was a fairly small absolute risk reduction. And it was only after you did this torturing of the data. And I was actually part of a conference earlier this year where we met with the investigators and various representatives from various groups around the country to talk about this. And the investigators kind of agreed at that time that, you know, we really ought to wait a few more years. And certainly all the non-investigators there said, we really need to wait a few more years and get some more data. And that's kind of where we stand. There's this hint of a benefit. There is, I think, hope that there may be some relative risk reduction for ovarian cancer specific mortality at the end of, 3 more years of follow-up. They did, to their credit, have fairly low rates of surgeries per cancer detected, lower than for the USPLCO trial. But this is all kind of complicated by the fact that this algorithm is proprietary. And the computer modeling that they use to figure out when a woman is abnormal or not is proprietary. In fact, you can go to abcodia.com or you can go to therocatest.co.uk and you can order it now, £150, about $275. And the thing is, and they actually say, you know, you order that, you get a purchase a voucher online, you schedule an appointment with your consultant who they've identified some, I guess, you get a blood test, and then you get your results. But, you know, obviously this, in order to see any benefit, even if there is some, you have to do this for 14 years, you know, to see a real benefit. And so, you know, I think the concern is that a lot of women are going to get, who are, you know, understandably concerned about ovarian cancer, may start getting this test, but not really have the duration of follow-up that you need. I think there are a lot of unanswered questions. It's not something I would recommend right now. There may be a role for this kind of testing in high-risk women. I think that's probably the best thing I could say right now.
I can't help wondering, though, the ethics of having such a tool and making it proprietary. I wonder who funded its development and how, particularly in a country like the UK, this is going to work.
I have no idea of the laws and rules in the UK. Certainly, there are plenty of examples of NIH-funded research leading to a new molecule or target and drug, and then it gets commercialized by somebody else. And this was an NHS-funded study, so UK government funded this huge, long, very expensive trial. And yet, and I don't know what the test is being sold for in the UK, or if currently the UK does not recommend its use, so I don't think the UK government is paying for it at all. I think the only way women can get it in the UK is by paying for it out of pocket.
I mean, I don't know why. It bothers me more than the molecule. I mean, this is just a thought algorithm with computer software, and it doesn't cost them anything. It's not like they have to run any blood tests or, you know, it just...
Well, Mark Zuckerberg may disagree with you, and he may say there's some real value in algorithms and in being the first one to develop a really useful algorithm. So, I mean, I think I see that, but at the same time, pushing this out there before it's really clear whether it works and that it's so expensive really does bother me, I guess. I agree with you.
Hey, Mark?
Yeah?
How come these podcasts are free?
That's a good question, because we're stupid. I don't know.
Talk with you again next week.
All right, see ya.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.